Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Eat Local New York podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Tringale. And in this week's episode, I am having dinner and talking with Mayor Ben Walsh for the second and final episode of Dinner with the Candidates. Well, I first just want to thank Amano for having us. We had dinner at Amano. I was, you know, trying to find a restaurant in town that we could go and record this episode at and have dinner and be pretty invasive because, you know, we've got a big, relatively large, you know, audio video setup that we're bringing with us. It's not small. And so I was trying to find a restaurant that I wanted to eat at that would be really cool setting and that was available. And, you know, the folks at Amano opened up their restaurant on a night that they were closed. They were shut down. They're not even working. They're not even open. They came in, opened the restaurant up for us, let us use the whole dining room, made us dinner. I mean, it was just amazing. It was just very gracious on their part and a wonderful experience. I highly recommend, you know, going there for dinner. You know. I highly recommend going there for dinner. I am often not telling people what my favorite restaurant is when we post publicly because I don't want to, you know, hurt anybody's feelings. Amano is our favorite restaurant. There's no question about that. I love Eden. I love St. Urban, but Amano is our favorite. And I'm going to tell you right now the top three restaurants in Syracuse, and they are Amano, Eden, and St. Urban. Those are the best three restaurants in the city of Syracuse, bar none. There's no question about it. Best three right there. So go check them out. Two of them are on the Eat Local card. That's pretty cool. I'm really happy that the mayor agreed to sit down with me. One thing that I learned that I realized as I was talking to him was that maybe it's just in my opinion, maybe it's not the same for you, but the current, and maybe you're not as involved, maybe you don't care as much, I don't know. The current mayor, the current, you know, whoever's holding the political position, who's, you know, fighting for their job, right? They're held to like a much higher, you know, scrutiny. Well, I mean, that's not the right way to put it. Their decisions are put under a microscope, I feel like, more than the person that's running against them, that's trying to come into the position. You know, it's like candidate A can say, who has never held the position, can say, well, listen, this is what I'm going to do, and this is what I'm going to do, and this is what I'm going to do, and this is my plan. And I hope I get elected so that way I can get in there and do it. And then for the mayor's point, from the mayor's position, it's, well, he's had 4 years. You know, let's go judge him on every tiny decision that he's made. That guy's had it rough, man. I mean, listen, I could not imagine being in that position. I'm a small business owner I'm a microcosm, like a tiny, you know, tiny, 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 mean nothing microcosm business owner. And I'm stressed. I could not imagine being the mayor of a freaking city. And on top of that, being the mayor of a city, being, you know, relatively young, and being the mayor of a city during a pandemic, holy cow, I would not ever wish that position on anyone. So the guy's had a rough 4 years just, you know, from that perspective. I'm not saying that to, like, defend him. I'm just saying I had this realization while I was talking to the mayor, cut him some slack. So that's what I was thinking. I'm not saying go vote for him because you need to cut him some slack. I'm just saying cut the guy some slack. Having said that, I will also say this, as we talked about it in the episode, I feel so, and I know he, you know, he said, you know, whatever to it, but he doesn't really take offense to it. I feel so bad for him that someone is out there running these, like, ran these disgusting ads against him, using his image and his name against him because of the Columbus statue. I really feel for the guy. I feel it's not a fun position to have, and you really, you know, and I, from the conversation I had with Counselor Bay, You really got to be a special person to have the care and dedication to a city and to a community the way that these two men, I'm sure most public servants, have. And they should both be commended for that. I don't really know what else to say in this intro. That's pretty much it. Go out and vote. Early voting is happening now through, I believe, Saturday. Election day is on Tuesday. Voter turnout for these off-year elections. Off-year is when the president isn't running, or very slow. But if the pandemic has taught us anything, it's that in politics, the only thing that matters is your local elections. You know, I feel personally that the county executive did a great job. And so did, you know, the mayor did a good, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to say the mayor did a good or a great job. Because honestly, I don't really remember a whole hell of a lot of it. I think the county had more of a role in our day-to-day lives than the city of Syracuse did. No offense, Mayor Walsh. But if the pandemic taught me anything, it's that your local officials, your local community, your, you know, city councilmen and women, your county legislators, your county executive, your mayors, your town boards, who, like, all of these people, and then also moving into the state realm, can have complete control over what happens to your life in situations like the pandemic. And frankly, we're not out of the pandemic. And so we need to be concerned about who we elect, because these are the people that are going to be making these decisions. I mean, think back to the yellow and orange zones for restaurants back in, you know, November, December, January, February. I think it went through March, right? Maybe April. I mean, think about that. Think about how many restaurants were on the verge of collapse and closing because of those restrictions. I mean, we talk about one of them here in the podcast. We talk about Devin from the Brianwall Eatery. I love Devin. I think he's a great guy. I loved his restaurant. I thought they made some really freaking great food. I'd say top five burgers that I've had in Syracuse, bar none, and really great chicken sandwich. That guy was dedicated. His entire life is his restaurant. And between the pandemic and road construction, he had to close. So these votes are important. It's important that you get out there and make a vote. Whoever you vote for, just go out there and vote. Having said that, here's my conversation with Mayor Ben Walsh. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah.
We last spoke 4 years ago when we did this.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. At the time, we were just doing the blogs, didn't have all this stuff, as you know.
And where were we? We were
at Astor.
Right? At Astor, yeah. That's right, yeah.
I really liked Astor.
Yeah, it was good.
Astor had this great GM for a time, John, who was running things, and everything was just extraordinary there.
Yeah.
And then it started to go downhill, and they sold, and now the HopSpot's in there, which they're doing a great job.
Yeah,
there's, you know, Armory is starting to get back some of that life that it used to have, I feel like.
Yeah,
Alex and I were just talking, Kyle is from Kasai Ramen is, mm-hmm. you know, now putting in he's going to have three new businesses, restaurants.
Three?
Yeah.
So I know he's going into the old Tusk space, yep. right? And then what else is cooking?
So next to that was the photography studio.
Yeah.
They just moved over a spot.
Okay.
And Kyle is opening up Tap Bakehouse, which is going to be a really awesome sourdough bakery.
Neat.
And then where Charlie's Pizza was, which is right next to him, it was Provisions.
Right.
He is opening up Danny's Steaks, which is, Kyle's from Philly, so it's a legit cheesesteak restaurant. Yeah.
Which is perfect because the last place, at least that I knew of, to get a good steak sandwich was Taste of Philadelphia up in Eastwood.
Yes.
Which is now closed.
Yeah.
And so that'll be a good addition.
Yeah, he's doing a good job. He's like making his own cheese whiz, and cool. So his bakery is gonna be supplying the bread for all of the restaurants and baking the rolls. And they should be open here in like maybe a week or two.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool to see that stuff picking back up in Armory.
Yeah.
I've been told that and you know, I don't know how you feel about this. So maybe it's a question for you.
So I've been told the old Urban Outfitters.
Yeah. Is that becoming a dispensary?
That's my understanding. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So I have mixed feelings about it. Yeah. Recreational cannabis is legal. Yeah. It's coming. I've met with the individuals that are proposing to put it there. And in some ways, you know, if it's going to be like, you know, I don't know what you compare it to, but yeah. You know, if it's going to be a destination retail establishment, Armory Square seems like a logical place to put it.
Yeah.
You know, as I said to him, I think the concern is, and it's just kind of fear of the unknown, is, you know, do you end up having a bunch of kids that just show up and then hang out outside, you know, getting high all day and stinking up the whole the neighborhood. Yeah. Who knows? I'm going into it open-minded.
Yeah.
I do think that, as I say, I actually just talked about this at a debate. Mm. I think the state was thoughtful in going into it about trying to ensure that the communities that have been most disproportionately impacted by marijuana laws, namely communities of color, are in a position to benefit from its legalization, which is absolutely the way it should be.
Yeah.
So how that translates into who does business and where, you know, I think is going to be really important. So to be determined, but like I said, I'm going into it with an open mind.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, I personally, I liked giving the joke. My in-laws asked me a couple months ago if I'd ever smoked weed before, and I used the old Bill Clinton line, I never inhaled. And I don't know how I feel. I personally am not a fan of marijuana. I can't stand the smell of it.
It smells, yeah.
And nowadays, you know, driving around or walking around downtown.
Smelled everywhere.
Yeah. And so for that one aspect, I'm not a fan of it. But I think it'll be really interesting to see what it does for future for tax revenue for the city, for the county.
Yeah.
See what kind of an impact it has on downtown and communities all over the state.
Yeah, agreed.
Other states have massively benefited from it. So I think it's great that New York and hopefully our community will.
Yeah.
In some way, shape, or form.
Right.
All right, so 4 years has passed.
Yeah.
What's it been like? I mean, are you happy that were elected the mayor? I'm sure you're happy you were elected, but I mean, the decision to be mayor and have your life change and now be focused on all these people.
Yeah.
What's that been like?
It's been a wild ride. Yeah. And, you know, there's been times when I try to remind myself, oh, you know, I knew what I was signing up for. The reality is, you know, I didn't. I mean, I had a good sense of what the job entailed, and I've enjoyed it thoroughly. And despite the pandemic, everything else that's gone on, there is not a moment or a day that's gone by where I wanted to do anything else. So, so that feels good. The pandemic was definitely a curveball.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, and we're still in it, which is the other challenge is kind of not knowing when and how we are ultimately get out of it.
Right.
But, you know, I look at pre-pandemic, we were really starting to fire on all cylinders. I mean, every metric that we measure ourselves by was on an upward trajectory. Mm-hmm. The good news is even now, most of them are. I mean, we just had census information come out that showed we grew in population for the first time in 70 years.
That was huge.
That's not by accident. That's significant. And, it's a combination of a number of factors, and we're still digging through the data, but it does appear that the investment that's taken place in the center city that's attracted younger people, millennials, has influenced it. As has our role as a refugee resettlement community.
Yeah.
Two really, I think, special dynamics of our community that are fueling a lot of what you and I are enjoying in terms of cuisine and and culture. So, population going up. Our schools, our kids have been through so much during the pandemic, but our graduation rates have hit a record high. Mm. When you look at some of the issues that really held us back, poverty still way too high, but our poverty rate has started to go down. Vacant properties, which is something I spent a lot of time on even before I was mayor, vacant properties are down. Mm. And city finances. I mean, people were having open discussions about whether or not the city was going to be insolvent and go bankrupt as recently as 4 years ago. We're not having those conversations right now.
Yeah.
And it's not just because of the federal relief funds. We had our finances on a path towards stability before the pandemic. And so you know, in those ways, that gives me a lot of hope that we've been able to do that in spite of the pandemic. And, yeah. And it gets me excited to think about if we can put the pandemic behind us, where we go from here.
Yeah. I've noticed it for maybe the last year, surprised at the people that I see walking around downtown.
Yeah.
It's changed so much where, you know, I'll be driving by and I'll say, you know, that person lives in Syracuse. So I think that's great. Syracuse is definitely attracting, new people. And I think a lot of it, who knows where they came from. But I think a lot of it is people, especially during the height of the pandemic, were trying to get out of bigger cities.
True.
We talked, since 4 years ago, we were Eat Local Central New York, and now we're Eat Local New York.
Cool.
And so we're working with 150 restaurants all across the state.
Oh, that's great.
And we were talking to people in, Millbrook and, Hudson Valley area who, even just that short of a move, we're in New York City, big restaurant tours or, real estate brokers who had moved to these smaller communities.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point, I've been working with Mayor Mark Olson and his campaign for county legislator.
Oh, cool.
And at one point over the summer in Fayetteville, I think there was one home available for purchase.
That's wild.
In all of Fayetteville, because so many people had moved from out of state.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been like, was it more stressful, you think, before the pandemic or after or during or?
So I think the most stressful time was early on in the pandemic when it started to become clearer the financial impact that it was having on the city.
Yeah.
And not knowing if or when Washington was going to provide direct relief to the city.
Yeah.
That was the scariest moment because, again, I came into office with the prospects of bankruptcy, not imminent by any stretch, but looming out there, at least being discussed. And we worked so hard over the first 2 years to start to close our budget gap, our reliance on the fund balance. We were starting to get some positive indicators. Our bond rating agencies were changing their economic forecast from negative to at least stable.
Yeah.
And so I felt really good about that, but we weren't quite there. And then for the bottom to fall out, our largest source of revenue, sales tax, just decimated.
Right.
And so, and then our second largest source of revenue, state aid. State was hurting too. So that was a moment that certainly shook me.
Yeah.
It forced us to make really difficult decisions. We had to, after adopting an initial budget in, get my years right, 2020, we had to come up with a contingency budget that cut an additional $18 million that we frankly couldn't afford to cut. That was brutal. From the moment that the ARPA funding became available at the state, at the federal level, that was a game changer because not only did it allow us to kind of stabilize our finances.
Yeah.
For the first time in the job, we could think proactively, long-term, and make strategic long-term investments that would start to move the needle on some of the, some of our biggest challenges. So it was just such a roller coaster, but I stand now, other than the unknown of the pandemic, it's a really exciting time to be doing this job.
Yeah. I think we've got some dinner coming our way.
Awesome.
There he is.
There he is.
Oh, nice.
Beautiful.
Enjoy, guys.
Thank you very much. Alex, what is this that I have?
So you didn't order. You just told him.
No, I told him. Yeah, I said nothing messy.
Okay.
Yeah, man. Wow, this looks amazing. I gotta get a picture of this. I couldn't. I was thinking about this when the.
I guess I should do this.
My
phone's over there. If you want to take a picture of it.
Yeah, sure. I'll say this was the mayor's dish. Get a bunch of likes. I was thinking about it when the last election for county executive, and at the time I was working at Cafe Kubal, and they had the podcast going, Holy cow, that's good. Hmm. And they had county executive on as a guest. It was kind of cool. We had Khalid on, we had Michael Green on, and then they had Tony Malavenda on.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, when I heard Tony Malavenda speak, it was like, in my head, I'm thinking as a voter, I really like this guy.
You know,
he just seems like, and once the pandemic hit, and I hope Tony doesn't listen or watch this, but once the pandemic hit, I could not have imagined him in the role of county executive.
Yeah.
I was thinking to myself, thank God that somebody like Ryan McMahon is you know, here taking charge, doing his thing. And I think that we look at leaders, I mean, everyone I'm sure has thought of this, but it's amazing the perception of a leader once that a community is in crisis like
absolutely.
That, how that changes.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think that, Ryan, was uniquely suited for that role. I think the combination of his experience, being very familiar with county government and how it works, combined with his personality.
Yeah.
He doesn't mind, being in front and making hard decisions.
Yeah.
It was he was the right leader for the time. And like you, I really like Tony. He's a smart guy, really good businessman. But I think that Ryan was in the right place at the right time. And you know, for me, I'm grateful for the relationship that we had prior to the pandemic because I've known Ryan my entire life.
Right.
He was a year younger than me. We grew up two blocks from each other in Strathmore. I was on Robineau. He was on Wellesley. Went to Most Holy Rosary and to Ludden. We moved out of the city, so I ended up at West Hill. He stayed at Ludden, played soccer against each other.
Yeah.
We were never best buddies, but we were always friendly and crossed paths throughout our life. And so when the pandemic hit, we had to kind of figure out what our respective roles were. And I remember talking to him the night before we made the call on the St. Patrick's Day parade.
Yeah.
And, that was one where overseeing the county health department had some say in it, and we issued the permit. So we got on the phone late that night and made the decision. And then from then on, I think that, we recognized that the health department is at the county level. Mm. And so the county really needed to be playing point. And my job as mayor was to, play a supporting role. And then where there were gaps or where the county didn't have capacity to address issues, whether it was working with the school district to make sure kids were getting connected to food and resources, I was able to block and tackle for the county exec and then, and then focus in areas where he didn't have the bandwidth to. But I had my moments where I'd have people posting on social media or texting and saying, hey, I see the county executive on TV every day. Why aren't you on that? And, that for an elected official, as much as I try to not, let my ego get in the way, that could be tough. But I was confident in our relationship, confident in my role as mayor to say, no, he's got a job to do. I have a job to do. If we stick to what we're doing, and not that we're always going to agree, but we stay on the same page, we're going to be okay. And I think we did that.
I really like that about you because I remember when we had dinner last time, I had asked you that question in regards to Mayor Minor, who, in fairness, at the time when Mayor Minor was in office, I did not have the same interest in local politics or concern as I do today.
Yeah.
But I remember as a resident thinking a lot of some of what she was talking about at the time, I felt like was pandering to attention, just trying to get, on news, mention, that kind of stuff. And I'd asked you, a similar question, are you here for Washington? Are you here for a state position? Is this a building block? What is going on? And your response was, my focus is, be the mayor of Syracuse. My job is to make sure trash is picked up on time, firefighters are there, police are there, residents are taken care of. That's it.
Yeah.
Stay in my lane, do what I'm supposed to do as the mayor,
yeah,
and not worry about anything else.
I feel the same way today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it hard at all to keep attention, being a little bit more connected in politics today than I was before, and seeing so much influence from outside of Syracuse, mm-hmm. outside the county, is it hard to like do your job as the mayor and you know, kind of put the blinders on to people reaching out saying, hey, we want you for this, we want you for that?
Well, so it is difficult to stay focused and to, you know, have to maintain the long view and push your agenda forward, because there are distractions every day.
Yeah.
There are the daily emergencies, there are outside influences, and yeah. So that has been a challenge. There's been a learning curve there. You know, the other thing, though, I would say is, as much as I enjoy the day-to-day governance of city government, again, yeah. making sure things are running on time and people are getting the service they need, given, I don't know if it's if the time that we're in is unique, but I think it probably was a little naive of me to think that I couldn't or shouldn't be focused on some of the you know, some of the things that are happening beyond Syracuse and how they impact us.
Yeah.
And so you know, I have tried to engage on issues that extend beyond Syracuse, as long as I feel like they're issues that are still relevant and important to Syracuse and ultimately help us. But you know, issues around thinking about, you know, what happened during 2020 after the murder of George Floyd, yeah. and, you know, issues around social and racial justice, you know, beyond just police reform, which is right. relevant for my work, but beyond that, you know, I think that the times do call for leaders at every level of government to, you know, to be engaged. Yeah. And so I've tried to do that while still making sure that, you know, that the wheels of local government are still spinning and, you know, on time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's, I was just recording a podcast with Mayor Olson before I came here tonight, and he had on, you know, maybe it's the last episode for the campaign podcast, at least because, mm-hmm. you know, Election Day is coming up. But he's doing a phone interview with the county executive, and as he's on the phone, he got there early, but he's fielding 20 different phone calls from different mayors in the community and different, you know,
yeah.
the fire station, and everybody's talking about, you know, the weather and the rain and how right. it's happening. And, you know, he's getting a call from Mayor Brazil saying, hey, it's headed your way, get ready, yeah. you know, so the creek and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I'll tell you, I give Mayor Olson a lot of credit. He was one of the mayors that I got to know early on the job, and participated somewhat in the County Mayors Association. And I remember being really impressed with his knowledge, not just about, you know, yeah. his own government, but just how local governments work. And I remember hearing him at one of the meetings and thinking, wow, that's you know, how I want to sound.
Yeah.
After, you know, a year on the job and be in a position where he is, where he can still do the day-to-day stuff, but look beyond it and be in right. a position where you're overseeing, you know, the County Mayors Association, for example.
Yeah.
You know, I was asked early on to join the executive committee of the New York Conference of Mayors. Hmm. And I did it as a favor to Mayor McCarthy in Schenectady, who I got to know a little bit. But the reality was I didn't have the bandwidth to be, you yeah. know, substantively influencing what was happening at NICOM. I hope to have, if I'm reelected, yeah. to have more time to do that. But, you know, you got to take care of, you know, home base first.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
You know, but when you get to a point where you can lend your, you know, your platform to other issues, I think it's important that you do.
Yeah. One of my favorite, and, you know, I won't say that, well, one of my favorite things that I've ever seen that's happened in politics, and maybe it's just because I was a little bit more and, you know, involved in watching and knowing some of the things that were happening at the time. But one of my favorite things, and well, let's just say it's my short time in local political history, mm-hmm. is the Westcott Massacre. That yeah. is by far. And I won't say, you know, to me, well, I'll give you my perspective on it. So for anybody listening who doesn't know what the Westcott Massacre is, it was, you were having, was it Dems for Walsh?
Dems for Ben, yeah.
Okay. So you're having a press conference up at the Westcott Theater. You have people in attendance with you. Mm-hmm. And you're standing out front. You're back to the door. And marching up the street is, was it her campaign manager?
Among others, yeah.
Okay. So it was a group of people, and from my memory that they were saying in Spanish, but I don't know if that's accurate or not, but they were basically louder than loud, and you have a microphone.
Right.
And they are so loud that they're drowning, you know, you out in this supportive group for you, saying Juanita for mayor or something to that effect.
There was some si se puede in there as well.
Right. Yeah. And so, and that was, not that you weren't doing well before then, but that was the thing that like turned the tide.
It was a turning point for sure.
I mean, Juanita was like, it was neck and neck. Maybe she had an edge. Mm-hmm. And then the Westcott massacre happens. And all of a sudden, and the Post Standard did a wonderful job of covering that and saying exactly what it was.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, you just, you know, I mean, that's one of the things that probably led to you being elected.
That campaign was all about moments and momentum, and it just built perfectly. But that was absolutely a turning point.
Yeah.
And I remember, as kind of rattling as it was at the time, you know, when we're trying to speak over the shouting, I remember standing there. It was almost like slow motion, and somebody came up to me and said, "Why are you smiling?" And I said, "I think this is good. I think this is a good thing." And I just had a feeling about it. And sure enough, it was.
Yeah. I mentioned it to Councillor Bay yesterday, and I think that it's, I told him it's arguably, well, not arguably, it is better for humanity. But this election has felt and been so different compared to the last one.
Yeah.
You know, I remember I made the comment that, you know, one of the debates with yourself and Juanita and Laura and Howie, the four of you were sitting on a couch. I forget who the moderator was for Syracuse.com, but it looked like the two kids arguing and the parents on the outside not saying anything. They couldn't get a word in.
Yeah.
Because it was really a lot of just, you know, her attacking you and you were like defending yourself. And for pure entertainment, that was a wonderful election.
Sure.
But this one, it hasn't been that way. I haven't seen any of that, at least.
No, it really hasn't. And it's not my style. I like to, you know, I pride myself on it.
You were not the aggressor in that one.
Right, but at the same time, if I get punched, I'm going to punch back.
Right.
And you know, I did then, and I have now.
Mm.
But I don't know if it's, Councillor Bay and I go back a long way.
Yeah.
And we've worked together in a few different capacities. And so there's a familiarity there and a comfort level that... that I think has allowed us to maintain, you know, a level of respect between each other. And there, you know, there's been a couple of times where a couple of the debates have gotten a little heated.
Yeah.
But after each one, you know, we shake hands and I was just saying today, we just had our last debate today, that I feel good that we were able to, you know, to maintain that throughout.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think it's really important. I mean, especially after the presidential election, you kind of expect a certain level of things to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, I can't wait to see the Spectrum one, but the Syracuse.com one with Chris Baker, you know, moderating. Yeah, both of you had your comments that came at the end of your time.
Mm-hmm.
And you would, you know, both of you would respond, but definitely not to the level that it was four years ago. And I think that's a glimmer of hope for humanity, maybe, for Syracuse, that to use your own tagline, we've risen above.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
So it's been, I can't say that it's been crazy exciting.
I would agree.
So one thing that has, one thing is it's just drove me crazy over the past year. I'm Italian and Sicilian, and then on my dad's side, on my mom's side, it's everything, right? Irish and Scottish and German and, you know, you name it.
Yeah.
You know, my grandparents were 100%, you know, Italian, and my grandfather's Sicilian, grandmother's Italian. We're just a very different, we're third, fourth generation removed.
Right.
We're not like a part of the Italian American League, my wife and I, or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I don't really care too much about the Columbus statue. Mm-hmm. Like, if there's a group of people that feel that it's, you know, hurtful to them and the history of, you know, Christopher Columbus, whatever. If there's a group of people, I feel like as a community, you should be inclusive. You should be seeking to lift anybody up and, you know, ensure that without, ensure that people are cared for,
yeah.
I guess is the best way to say that. Yeah. So I personally don't care if the statue stays or goes. Mm-hmm. What does drive me crazy with it is whoever this group of people are that are attacking you over the statue is the signs are one thing. But you know, being, you know, owning a marketing company and running Facebook ads and seeing the amount of money that they're spending.
Yeah.
And the, you know, I do enjoy trolling people that deserve it from time to time.
Uh-huh.
And most of the time when I see the ad, I comment with, who are the idiots that are funding this?
Uh-huh.
Like, because to me, I have no idea who those people are. Mm-hmm. But the fact that however they feel about you or your decision or your views on what should happen with the Columbus statue.
Yeah.
The fact that there's someone out there that's running a picture, a Facebook ad that has your picture and then a shadow of Pinocchio on the back, to me, in a community is inexcusable.
Yeah, yeah, I think it does their cause a disservice for sure.
Yeah,
it really doesn't bother me for that very point that I think it probably hurts their cause more than it helps it.
Right.
It's a shame. It's really unfortunate that we're in this. You know, I tried to address this topic in a way that that moves our community towards healing.
Right.
And I think a few things happened that have inhibited our ability to do that. You know, one is that given how and when the decision came to light, at the height of the racial justice protests, it has given those that disagree with my decision kind of an easy out to say that was a flash in the pan moment in time. You caved to cancel culture, and you know, now we're back to normal where everything's fine.
Right.
And I think that does a disservice to the many people over many decades who have said, you know what, this isn't okay. And this symbol, while we understand the history behind how it came to be, which is important and not something that we should erase and I would never support, regardless of intent, has led to pain and a feeling of oppression or marginalization among a certain constituency within the community. And it's not just limited to, you know, the Onondaga Nation or to indigenous communities, their communities of color and others. And so that's been around for a long time. So again, I think to suggest that this is about, again, either 2020 or cancel culture or anything else isn't accurate. You know, I happen to think, and I recognize that I'm not Italian, that they're...
Oh, you're not?
I'm not. Although, you know, I certainly love the food and the wine.
Yeah.
I just feel that there has to be a better way to celebrate our local Italian American heritage.
Sure.
Tell the story of how and why the Columbus statue was erected, while still being able to to make modifications to change things. I think that there's a better way. And and you know what I wish happened was what happened in Buffalo, which is where the Italian American community. I think we have to be careful when we talk about the community, right? You're a part of the community.
Yeah.
There are a lot of. I've heard from many, many Italians that feel the same way that you do.
Yeah.
So I don't want to paint with too broad of a brush.
Right.
But those that, let's say, the Columbus Monument Corporation, those that really care about that statue, if they were to have, done what was done in Buffalo, was to acknowledge, the issue. And control their own destiny and be able to call the shots. That I presented that as my desired outcome to them, and they weren't having it. And then I felt that I needed to make a decision because that's what leaders do. And even in making the decision, I didn't show up and rip it down overnight.
Right.
We've had a thoughtful process There is a formal legal process that needs to take place that involves the Landmark Preservation Board and the Syracuse Public Art Commission. Yeah. All that is yet to come. But again, I've tried to be thoughtful. I've tried to be respectful. And it is unfortunate that it has continued to drag out and be this divisive issue in the community. But yeah. I'm committed to getting through it and to ultimately getting to a place of healing.
Yeah. Has it been, I mean, I know you are, and hopefully it's true, more put together than I am. But I know that if I have a plan for, you know, everybody has a, I forget who has the famous quote, but everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face.
That's Mike Tyson, yeah.
Mike Tyson. So was it difficult over the last 4 years to stick to some sort of a plan that you had when you were first elected?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, besides the pandemic.
Right. Yeah. Again, the pandemic, the, you know, the movement around social justice and police reform. If I could just speak on that one for a minute, because that was kind of the other thing that was, you know, that certainly wasn't anticipated. You know, when I took the job, I made a decision that I wanted to bring in a new chief, that I wanted to do a national search. Chief Fowler was good enough to be willing to serve for another year to allow us to do that. We did that. A lot of the conversations that were being had out on the streets in 2020, we had in the community. We had community meetings throughout the city. We heard really painful stories from people about their interactions with law enforcement. And all of that informed my decision to hire Chief Buckner. And Chief Buckner was brought in as a reform chief. And that doesn't mean that, you know, that we felt the Syracuse Police Department had to be, you know, completely overhauled. There's a lot of really good officers and really good work that takes place, but it needed a fresh set of eyes, and Chief Buckner brought that. Yeah. And he came in as a reform chief, and he initiated reform. And prior to George Floyd, I was proud of the progress that we were making on reform. But when that came to be, the calls for reform became louder and became more urgent.
Yeah.
And we tried to heed those calls, but that led to a level of involvement and investment in time that we hadn't anticipated.
Yeah.
And so just like COVID, we tried to keep everything moving forward, but the reality is, you know, we only have so much capacity. And
right.
You know, there was a significant stretch where much of the capacity of my office, between me and the deputy mayor, at a minimum, not to mention the police department, was really consumed by that. I think we're better off for it.
Right.
But to your question, it certainly makes, you know, executing the long-term plan and keeping everything moving along at the same time challenging.
Yeah. Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I talk to friends who, I'm a registered independent. I typically try to vote libertarian when I can. Hmm. I grew up in a really Republican household. Mm-hmm. You know, when I could first go into the voting booth, I pretty much just went right along the R line, you know, not knowing anything about the candidates or what the issues were or anything like that. And, you know, that's changed. And I feel like I have friends that are on both extremes. Mm-hmm. And so some of my friends who, you know, in the city who are talking about the need for transparency and, you know, the forums and, you know, the review boards and all that kind of stuff. I think, yeah, that makes sense. There should be more transparency.
Right.
And then I have family that are in, you know, federal and, you know, local law enforcement. And I think about the things that I hear from them and, you know, the need to, you know, keep them protected because they can be targeted more.
Sure.
Just as people of color can be targeted from police officers and law enforcement that arguably shouldn't be in those positions with those, if they are those type of people. But so I kind of, you know, I don't know. I go back and forth on it. I've had experiences with our police in Syracuse because I was arrested for, no, I'm just kidding. we had, during the pandemic, we had that summer, we had a home. I live on the north side. I live in Hood.
Oh, nice.
It's not nice, Mayor Walsh. Thank
you. That's okay.
But,
I actually really like Hood. We need to pave Hood Ave.
Yeah.
That's on our list, hopefully, for next year. And there's some good housing stock, but there's some quality of life challenges for sure.
I was fortunate. We bought, when we moved in, I bought the house 5 years ago, first house I've ever owned. To be quite frank, if I'd known what Hood was, and Hood isn't bad, it's not Ross Park, but there's a lot worse. And I do feel too privileged in saying that, you know, Hood, you know, whatever. But if I had known 5 years ago that I should have waited and saved another $10,000, I could have been in a suburb. I arguably would have. But having said that, I was able to purchase the empty lot next to my home for $1. Mm-hmm. You know, and so now we have this nice yard, and, you know, hopefully one day when I'm not working 20 hours a day, I'll do something nice and, you know, beautiful with it.
Yeah.
But so we had a home break in, and they, you know, we had three issues of robberies at our home.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And two of them were our faults. One of them, we were both gone. Our dog Buddy was at my in-laws because we were just coming back from vacation, and we didn't have a home security system at the time. And
we did not.
And we left the living room window open. And I had these two big bushes right in front of the house that just made it
good
perfect
cover
for somebody to slip in, and nobody saw anything.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they got about $10,000 worth of like camera gear and stuff. Now, I got a panic call from my wife. I was 45 minutes away at the time, and she said, "Were you home?" I said, "No, why?" And she said, "Because like drawers, something was dumped out on the bed." She, you know, in my true fashion, thought that maybe I was in a rush, came home, and I, as soon as she said that, I said, get in your car. Yeah. I called 911. A friend of ours who's a parole officer showed up just before the police, but the police arrived pretty quickly, and they sat with her. They, you know, went through the house. Nothing came of it, unfortunately. And so, you know, we took the bushes down. We got a security system, you know, all that kind of stuff. About 2 weeks later, I can tell you this now because they're gone, but we had backyard chickens for about a year.
Okay.
I will just say there should be more clarity on some of those rules, because I talked to three different departments. And
with our rezone, we're gonna clarify rules, and you will be able to have some chickens.
Sweet.
Legally.
I got rid of them now. So.
Okay.
I can tell you about all the bad stuff I did. No, I'm just kidding. So we had them, but anyway, we had an issue of like neighborhood kids trying to break into the front porch. And at that time, and the challenge there was, now we didn't call 911 because it wasn't life threatening. Mm-hmm. But calling a non-emergency line, it took about an hour and a half for police to show up. And it was like a repeated thing that day.
Yeah.
They wound up finding the kids. They were young, enough, you know, they talked to the parents, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Nobody was hurt. And then a third time of left a car unlocked, somebody broke in and stole, you know, some change and stuff like that.
Yep.
So I don't know. I've heard Counselor Bay's response to, you know, police being required, new hires being required to live in the city.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand the point of view of if they're in the city, if they're living, they're city residents, they're going to have more of an investment in the community.
Yep.
You know, more of an investment in the people, know them by name, things like that. But what do you think is your biggest challenge as mayor with regards to the police force in terms of retaining police officers to stay, attracting new ones to come in and apply? Like, what is that biggest challenge?
There's so many challenges. You know, again, looking back at 4 years ago, I knew that the police department was going to occupy a lot of my attention. I don't think I fully understood how much. And it's because it's not just in one area. Certainly that the crime that happens, especially the violent crime, that in and of itself occupies a lot of my attention.
Sure.
But then on the, you know, on the other side, on the, you know, whether it's the reform side, the discipline side, the community side, there's a lot. And so what I've tried to do, and, you know, admittedly, we're still figuring it out. But what I've tried to do, number one, is to not fall into that kind of, you know, false choice or dichotomy that, you know, you're either going to blindly back the blue or you're going to defund the police. Never bought into that. Even at the height of the protests, you know, there was a at one point, and I caught a lot of grief for it by members of the community, where I said, you know, you don't have to pick sides, and people are like, oh, you know, you're right. Just being equivocal or whatever. But I really believe it. Chief Buckner says it best when it comes to the issue of police reform, police accountability. If you have the ability to take someone's life and liberty, you should be held to the highest possible standard. Yeah. And I believe that. And while the vast majority of officers, live up to that high standard, not all of them do. Mm. And for those that don't, we do need to hold them accountable. And I do think, historically, not unique to Syracuse, there has been a lack of accountability with with police officers, in law enforcement in general. So that needs to change. The challenge is, and this is where, you know, I'm still learning, is how you do that in a way that the officers still feel respected, valued, protected. And you know, that's been really hard, especially over the past year as there's been a national focus. And, you know, I've talked to officers and it's really frustrating for them. And I get it because, again, they're the ones putting their lives on the line. They're the ones, unfortunately, often in really difficult situations where the people that they are serving are not treating them with the same level of respect that we're expecting them to treat those that they serve. That's all really hard. Not to mention the fact that more often than not, when they're engaging with our constituents, it's when our constituents are at their very worst, whether it's because their home got broken into or because somebody that they love got hurt. So it's really, really difficult. So that being said, anytime I see a police officer, if I have a minute, I stop, say hello, make sure, I appreciate what you're doing. I know it's not easy. Stay safe. I try to do the little things. I try to do the more public things. You know, there's been a lot of controversy around the police contract that we negotiated with the PBA. I tried to show through that negotiation that while we certainly wanted certain things out of it, including police residency for our city residency for our new police officers, and other things, that we were willing to increase the cost of living and because we valued them. And so I've tried to do those things. But there's no doubt, and I do think that some of it is influenced by, you know, politics, and some of it's influenced by the national narratives, that there are, I'm sure, a number of officers that don't feel that I value them or respect them. And that, you know, that bothers me, but it's just the reality of it. And so all I can do is just try to do that. You know, all the while keeping this community safe.
Right.
Because that's really job number one for me is public safety. And we need the police department for that. We need our police officers. They're not the only solution, for sure. As an example, the kids that that broke into your house, you know, my feeling is that the best way that I can help those kids is by, you know, giving them, you know, parks programming and a job in the summer, then, you know, throwing them for up in Hillbrook, right? Yeah. So it goes far beyond the police department. But we need to make sure that when you or any other city resident calls 911 or calls the police, that you get an adequate response and you're protected. Yeah. And so it's a lot of balls to juggle. And it's, again, it's what I signed up for.
Yeah.
I think overall, when you look at, you know, big picture, I think we've done a fairly good job, but there's absolutely room for improvement.
You're at a massive disadvantage, I feel like, just hearing, listening to you talk, because, you know, you're coming off of 4 years of doing the job, and, you know, I feel like you're just held to a higher, like, level of scrutiny than somebody who's, you know, I love Counselor Bay. I think he's a great guy. I think he's been a good, you know, counselor, and he could make a great leader. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if he's held I don't want to forget about Janet. Everybody always says that, but, you know, Republicans never going to be mayor of Syracuse. Mm-hmm. They're not held to the same scrutiny, I don't feel like, as you are. Yeah. You know, it's like you've been, it's like, you know, the job review of what you've done over the last 4 years.
Yeah.
So if there's one area, of one neighborhood, you know, I live on Hood. My office is in the Delavan Center. You know, I'm downtown a lot. I'm in the suburbs a lot, but I'm in downtown a lot. Mm-hmm. And I have to drive down Butternut. Mm-hmm. My wife refuses to drive down Butternut. You know, she works for the Department of Health, so. She's right above Wildflowers, but she refused to do Butternut. Mm. I was telling them that we went to St. Urban the other night for our anniversary dinner. Yes. And she said, we're going out somewhere nice. Please don't take butternut. If there was one neighborhood that you could snap your fingers, fix it, what do you think it would be?
So I don't know that I can pick one neighborhood, but I think my mind goes to what you were just talking about. So what I like to say about Syracuse is we have pockets of excellence, wonderful neighborhoods, dense, dynamic urban environments, but we have significant gaps. A lot of those gaps are along our neighborhood business corridors. Butternut is one. The one for me that, you know, that evokes similar feelings of just, you know, well, I'll just say it. South Gaddis Street and North Gaddis Street for that matter. So that's what, you know, I live on the west side, and I'm on Gaddis every day.
And there's
nothing more frustrating than for me as the mayor.
Right.
You know, I can't curse somebody and say, how can you let there be litter on the street? Or how can you let, you know, those storefronts go vacant? But the reality is, you know, what you're seeing along those corridors is a reflection of the real challenges that we are facing in the city.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie, when you talked about moving to the suburbs, that hurt a little bit. And so it may sound a little defensive here, but here's something that everyone has to keep in mind. What you're seeing on Butternut Street, what you're seeing on South Gaddis Street, North Gaddis Street, that is the face of many of the ills of society.
Yeah.
Substance abuse.
For sure.
Mental health issues. Poverty. And those aren't city issues. Those are society issues.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, if you were to stop and talk to some of the individuals that you see walking down the street, particularly struggling on the street, because I've done it, you're going to talk to kids from Fayetteville,
right,
from Oswego, from Fulton. You know, the city disproportionately bears the burden of the ills of our society.
Right.
And so, you know, I don't say that to as an excuse or for people to feel sorry for us.
Yeah.
I do think that there needs to be a greater understanding and recognition of that. I think that there are a lot of people that live outside of the city that think that somehow they're, you know, where they live is special or unique, that they don't have those problems, and that the city is special and unique in a bad way. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
You know, there are some legitimate reasons for why those challenges are concentrated in the center city. There's density that allows for, you know, service provisions and other things that just isn't efficient outside of the city. But it's also the result of very intentional government policies, from redlining to exclusionary zoning that takes place to this day in our suburban communities that don't allow affordable housing to go in to them. And so I think we all need to recognize that and then work together to solve it. And so, but yes, I feel you on Butternut. You know, what I can say is, you know, we have made investments there. You know, you saw some of the new housing that Housing Visions did. I think that helps a little bit. We need to do more to support, you know, the existing businesses that are there. I'm happy to report that your stretch of Butternut, north of Butternut Circle, we are starting this week on that long planned Dig Once project.
Don't get me started on the construction. Okay.
I figured that would have to come up at some point. So, well, it's not downtown. The Dig Once project that Assemblyman Magnarelli secured $10 million for, which was delayed by the pandemic, is starting this week. We're going to start with some utility improvements, and then the real project will be done next week. But you want to talk about roads? Bring it. I'm ready.
I will say, of course, driving around, being 5 minutes late for a meeting, you know, I'm going to curse whoever was responsible for the construction in downtown.
You can curse me.
It was awful. It was really bad, you know, and at the end of the day, for somebody like me, you know, who cares? I was 5 minutes late for a meeting, or I just sit in traffic. I mean, Syracuse doesn't get traffic except for 81, you know. And so at the end of the day, whatever.
Yeah.
It was a little, you know, irritating at best for most.
Yep.
But you have somebody like, now this is his statement, so I'm not saying that this is pure fact, right? But you have somebody like Devin, who owned the Brinewell Eatery.
Yeah.
Now, unique restaurant, you know, one of a kind in terms of garbage plates in Syracuse. Horrible location. Jefferson just sucks. for, you know, food. Mm-hmm. You know, that one spot that now Cafe Kubal occupied was a lot of different places, you know, Gannon's at one point.
Yep. Yep.
You know, even the location that Devin was in was a lot of different restaurants from different points. You'd think it would work because you've got, you know, the county, you know, the courthouse, and you've got common space, and you would think, but really, if you don't capture it, then you're not going to capture it. So struggles from day from the pandemic, and he said as much, but he did say that, you know, the construction really did him in.
Yeah.
And even his final day in business, the road was shut down and people couldn't drive there. So my question is, it's not like, hey, now defend yourself. But my question, my concern with it is, and I don't know what the city's responsibility is to reach out to the businesses and say, hey, this is happening. Let's see what we can do. But that smallish scale of downtown road construction.
Yeah.
And I do love driving on new paved roads. So thank you for that. But what happens when I-81 construction happens? And it's on such a more massive scale.
Yeah. We've got a lot to say. I'm going to try to be brief. So number one, when I read that about Devin, I called him. I never had a real conversation with him before, but but my wife is from Rochester. We love garbage plates. Nice. I got the Syracuse garbage plate. She got the Rochester garbage plate.
Yeah.
Hoffman's, Zweigel's, love it. Right. I was so excited when they opened. And they were one of especially at the height of the pandemic when we were getting a lot of takeout, that was one of our spots.
He was one of the first, I will just say, that entered his own delivery platform.
Huh.
He was I think he was maybe the one of the only.
Yeah.
He built his own delivery platform to avoid Grubhub and DoorDash.
That's cool. So I felt terrible when I read it, and I called him and I told him I felt terrible. And you know, we talked about it, and he did, you know, everything that you said. You know, the pandemic was really the critical issue. But the streets was just at a time when there was no room for error.
Right.
The timing couldn't have been worse.
Yeah.
I truly feel badly about that. And I think that there's a couple of things that that you have to take into consideration. Number one is, our streets are in rough shape and have been for a long time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of deferred maintenance there. And when I came into office, I was focused on catching up. And so just for some perspective, in 2017, the year before I was mayor, the city paved 4 miles of roads.
Mm.
This year, we're going to pave more than 24 miles of roads. And that doesn't even count what we're doing downtown, because that's part of a federally funded, actually two federally funded projects. So we are doing a lot more, and we need to. And as I've said, this is what living in a growing city feels like.
Yeah.
What was particularly challenging about the downtown projects is they are federally funded projects. They take years to plan. You have a specific time frame in which to spend the money. And one of the two projects, the State and Salina project, we anticipated being essentially through downtown this year.
Yeah.
And the pandemic slowed it up. So we had that one that we still needed to get through. And then the other one, which is the Montgomery Clinton, whatever, which was just kind of a hodgepodge of downtown streets that we lumped together because they were eligible for federal funding. And it was a perfect storm.
Hmm.
Now, when you look at the impact of the pandemic, you could make the argument, it's the pandemic. So if there's ever a time to do it, maybe you do it when it's better, when there aren't, a ton of people down there. But at the same end, there's a lot of businesses that are, that are just barely getting by. And again, any little thing like that can have a significant difference. Hmm. So a significant impact. So in retrospect, I think that the federally funded projects, concentrating those, even if they were 1 year behind the other, having gone through it now, I think we would do it differently and probably try to spread it out a little bit more, maybe not concentrate it all downtown. But it was necessary. The other thing that I'll mention, and then I'm going to shut up, is that we're doing a lot more dig once right now. So in 2018, we had a water main break on the 300 block of Salina Street. And I was standing on the edge of the pit, and they were showing me where they fixed it. And they said, oh, but the whole, you should see both sides, it's just shot.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, so we're going to fix this one. We're going to fill it in. And then aren't we coming in here in a year or two to pave it? And they said, yeah. And I said, well, are we going to fix the water line? They said, well, we don't really have that in the budget. And I said, we're going to find it in the budget because that's nuts. And that's what we've been doing for far too long. So a number of different areas, Montgomery Street, Salina Street, we added additional time by going in, fixing the water lines and the sewer lines beforehand. But it's been disruptive. I just keep saying, you know, short-term pain, long-term gain. But that pain is real for some. And, and it's, I feel badly about it.
Yeah. So my last question for you is, if there is one thing, I know we're talking about one neighborhood, but if there is one thing that you could change, one issue in the city, again, you know, you're reelected November 3rd, stress is over, and you say, I can change this one. I don't have to worry about council, you know, approving it. I don't have to worry about funding or anything. I can change this. What is it?
That's hard. I mean, I think the easy answer, I'm not sure it's the right one, but, you know, I think that so much of what challenges our community is rooted in poverty. We just have far too many people struggling in this community. The reason I say it's hard is because there's so many other related factors, you know, systemic racism, substance abuse, mental health issues. And then when you combine all of those things with, you know, with poverty, it just makes for really, you know, seemingly intractable challenges that that I think, you know, if we could get people more opportunity, we could start to work through some of those other issues. So I'd probably come up with something maybe a little better if I had more time to think about it, but that's immediately what comes to mind. There's just too many people struggling in this community. You know, related to that is violence. I mean, by far the hardest part of my job has been to, whether it's standing on a crime scene in the emergency room or in a family's living room that just lost somebody, and there's no more helpless feeling than that because there's nothing that I can do to bring those people back. But all I can say to them and to you is that, you know, I'm going to do everything in my power to try to make sure that it doesn't happen to anybody else and that we do change things. But, you know, again, that's all of those issues are related. We just need to isolate them, address them, and just continue to try to do better. And that's what I'm going to continue to try to do.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking time to do this. I know it's close. You've got a week left. I'm very excited for next week to see what the results are going to be. And
me too.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for dinner. It was amazing. I feel somewhat defeated that I didn't finish it. I love it. So thank you.
Well, there it is, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the Local New York podcast. I really appreciate it. I hope that you learned something from these two episodes. You know, if anything, I just wanted to introduce the listeners, the viewers, to who these two candidates are. No offense to Janet, who's running as the Republican. It's just, I'm sure Janet's a wonderful person. You know, I have a bad taste in my mouth from 4 years ago because when I tried to reach out to Laura's campaign about having her on the podcast, they turned me down or they just didn't respond, I think. And, you know, also Republicans, you're not going to get elected as mayor of Syracuse for a while. Just don't think it's going to happen. Anyways, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you want to learn more about Eat Local New York, you can find us online at eatlocalnewyork.com. You can visit us on our Facebook or Instagram page where we're most active. We're also on TikTok and Twitter and our YouTube channel where we post the video version of all these episodes. Again, thanks so much for listening to the podcast. Make sure you get out there and vote.